to Marywell, the Mommy Group, Encinitas, California, 2005. Three baby carriages clashed on the back trails of the million-dollar homes set just 2 miles from Moonlight Beach. All three mothers looked up, smiling, as the front wheels bumped together. All three carriages with two-year-old boys playing with tiny cars and making car sounds as their mommy pushed the buggies. All three buggies were the newest of 2004 and had the large front bike wheel and two back wheels. All three stood smiling and greeted one another. "Hi, I'm Joni, and this is Culver."
"Hi there, I'm Leslie, and this is Dylan.
Good to meet you both. My name is Janelle, and this is Trevor."
All three toddlers grinned at each other from their carriages as if they somehow knew this was the beginning of something new, something significant in their small world. Finally, after some small talk that started awkward and quickly became comfortable, Joni said,
"Hey, would you all like to have a mommy group?
I know a few other moms with two-year-old boys."
Everyone laughed in a flattered way and remarked together, "Yes, that would be ideal." Before the end of the week, an email went out and all the mothers were scheduled to meet at Joni's 5,000-square-foot house. Leslie's home of the same size and the same floor plan was nearby. Janelle had a slightly smaller home nearby, but just as luxurious. As their husbands worked and traveled, this would be a great way to get the babies together and teach some toddler social skills. The first meeting was a series of everyone staying within arm's length of their toddlers and getting them acquainted. It went quickly, and it was soon nap time. Everyone thanked Joni and returned home. At the next meeting, the toddlers were better at playing together. The mothers congregated in Joni's kitchen, where conversations started on the topic of how to get diapers out of the house quickly to avoid a stench and how to freeze homemade baby food. But it quickly turned to sensational stories in the media, such as the disappearance and return of Elizabeth Smart, Lacey Peterson's abduction and murder. The conversation provided a break from the daily care of the toddler as each mother added a sensational graphic detail. The next mommy meeting, also at Joni's house, was when everything changed. That day, the San Diego sun was not quite as bright. There were dark clouds and some rain starting as everyone made their way into Joni's large foyer. The toddlers played a little quieter than usual, as if they created this moment. Each mother congregated in the kitchen, having now grown comfortable with the routine and with each other. The conversation flowed easily, and this time started to sound like teenage slumber party talk. Joni made turkey meatloaf and served it with a side of potatoes and spinach. Everyone ate in the dining room. Janelle offered to bring a meal the next time.
"Well, sleep is the new sex. Everyone wants it and no one is getting it," said Naya, who was a part-time medical doctor of gynecology. "Oh, gee, when I finally get little Kyle down and he sleeps 2 hours and then tries to climb out of his crib, it's all we can do to get him back down. No one is thinking about getting busy," Leslie exclaimed, sipping her drink.
"We are ready to lock Culver's door because he came out and peed down the staircase and thought it was funny. Instant spanking." Joni spoke with passion, jerking her neck from side to side to show her displeasure at what Culver did.
"So, Joni, how long were you modeling, and which videos were you in?"
Joni smiled in a flattered way. She went on to briefly talk about her career, how she met her husband, and which MTV music videos she was asked to star in. She turned red and said, "But that was a tough time, actually." Everyone looked at her quietly and continued eating.
"Great meal, Joni. Hats off to the chef," said Claire, who was pregnant with her second child.
"Absolutely." Everyone raised their glass of ginger ale.
"So you and Kevin met on the set of MTV?" asked Leslie.
"So yeah, I mean, if you want to know. Back then, every person I knew was snorting coke. I was 16 and somehow got invited to these after-work parties. And I'm telling you, it's highly addictive." The ladies continued eating. "It was a dining room in a million-dollar neighborhood with homes built right next to each other. And at this moment, There was no judgment. So what's it like? I mean, what's the appeal? Why is it so addictive? Asked Janelle, who sincerely wanted to know.
Naya, being a physician, looked as though she knew more about it medically than what she would add. Joni shook her head and cranked it to the side. Her pretty face with large eyes and supple lips and long golden hair made anyone wonder why she stopped modeling.
When you're on coke, you are the funniest and smartest person in the room, and everyone and every conversation is engaging and just as smart. Everyone and everything is interesting. Colors are brighter. Food tastes better. People look better. But when you come down...
Joni put her fork down abruptly and searched the room with her eyes for a moment.
Well, then nothing is interesting. Everything becomes gray.
Joni finished her thought and then took a bite of her meatloaf.
Naya looked out at everyone and shook her head with a slight smile. Being a longtime physician, she could not have explained it better. She had attempted to treat young people during her residency, but hearing it directly from Joni, it was better said. Still, everyone appreciated Joni's honest answer.
I did coke once. Anna, who was very quiet, raised her hand. Everyone grinned at the honesty in the room.
Yeah, I was 19, and with sorority sisters, it's amazing that people can afford that much coke, but I quickly realized I couldn't afford the addiction with loans to pay for law school.
Everyone chuckled.
You know, if I were at a party and people were doing coke, I don't think I could control myself. Once addicted to coke, always addicted to coke, Joni added.
That's what my sorority sisters said. Some of them, well, life didn't go well for them. I went cold turkey after one snort. I had to.
Anna spoke and quickly took a bite of her bread.
I can't be around coke, period. I would weaken because it was years of using, Joni added.
Okay. Leslie's got everyone's attention.
Naya nodded with the most frank and sincere understanding since this is what physicians would say, and she knew it. Everyone nodded, while sympathetic also enjoyed the sensational part of the conversation.
Okay, here's my juicy story. I watch porn every night.
Everyone laughed at Leslie's confession. She pointed at Naya and said, sleep, the new sex that everyone wants and no one is getting? Well, the husband travels and it's just me as the only adult in the house. I need more sleep, sister.
Hey, you have to take matters into your own hands, said Anna, which triggered more laughs.
Well, I need to tell you that my husband is addicted to porn, and like cocaine, once addicted, always addicted. He has the pastor at our church monitor his computer, and if he goes to any porn sites, they call him immediately. So he got a call the month before Christmas because I was ordering lingerie as a Christmas surprise, and so the pastor was unsure who was doing what.
Yeah, Pastor Miles knows it all, said Anna, who handed the bread basket to Leslie.
Well, we do what we have to do, said Leslie. So the mommy group continued regular meetings at Joni's house with potluck dishes, although Janelle offered to bring extra dishes. The next one was ahi tuna with purple cabbage sauce and crispy red potatoes. There was an agreement that each mother would get up in shifts to check all the toddlers so they would never be alone. More and more, the boys were enjoying the variety of toys and new company. Everyone sat in Joni's dining room with the excitement felt compared to anticipation of a good movie. What topics would be discussed this time? The newcomer and youngest member was Araceli, who was 21 years old and married to a 49-year-old who had a completely different look than the other husbands in the neighborhood. Mike and Araceli had abruptly moved into the neighborhood. Those who first met them noticed that Mike was covered in tattoos and didn't look healthy. He had a limited vocabulary and no formal education. Araceli had shared in her fast-talking, young-sounding New York accent that he worked in the import and export business. It was said with a hint of defiance. She expressed that he went daily to Tijuana. The group had already filled her in on all the previous conversations, including porn and coke addictions and modeling and MTV videos.
Hey, everybody. Purse party at my house. Which Saturday night are we all available?
Araceli spoke quickly and confidently, taking a bite of her tuna. Everyone looked flattered.
Purses and other goodies you may not be expecting.
Araceli flipped her eyebrows with a slight smile. She had a tattoo to match Mike's on her right arm. It was some type of desert scene with a reptile. You certainly have so much more overhead than I had when I was your age. I think I was living in the dorm. I didn't have your maturity and edge, Anna spoke kindly, taking a sip of her drink. All the other mothers nodded. Araceli answered quickly in her thick New York accent, which left the letter R off the word star and the R off the word digger. So, what were you all doing? Some of you were on MTV as superstars. I grew up in the Bronx. The FBI was always investigating my pop. Ma never said why. He would have me dropping off boxes of files and stuff at the basement of the local bakery. I wasn't allowed to open them, and believe me, I didn't. He gave me a $10 bill for each drop-off. You think I'm going to ruin my situation? That was good dough for a 15-year-old. But he told me the easiest way to marry money is to be under 25. Mike and me, we are in love. No, I'm not some gold digger. But I get my pop. We understand each other. If I decide I don't like Mike anymore, I'm already here, right? Everyone laughed as Araceli put her arms out as if she had scored a $1 million home, which we all did, and hit safe ground. Araceli had an attractive, symmetrical Latina, or was it Italian, face with long, dark hair. Compared to the others, she was streetwise. My mother said being pretty meant marrying well, and see this nose? Anahita, who grew up in Iran, pointed to her nose and stared at everyone. All mothers looked confused because Anahita was beautiful by any culture's standard of beauty. She had large brown eyes, clear skin, and a nose that complemented her face. If anything, no one would notice her nose, just her big brown eyes and gorgeous face. Four nose jobs. Four. This face took a long time. My mother said, without the nose jobs, I would never marry anyone who would care to provide. The other mothers smiled with intrigued and sympathetic looks. I can't imagine your nose was that bad, Joni said. Yeah, neither can I. Your face is flawless. As all the mothers weighed in, Anahita was searching through her digital camera, which many of us brought to take photos of our fast-growing toddlers. Finally, she nodded, almost vengeful toward herself. Okay, check this out. She held her camera photo out as if she were parading an important lost diamond. In this moment, clearly mattered. She had been holding this inside for a while. She stared out at the other mothers who had become her safe people, breathing hard. Everyone passed the camera around, seeing what Anahita looked like before the first nose job, after the second, the third, and finally now. No matter how shallow it would be perceived, no one could get past the evolution toward her beauty from what was vastly unattractive. Anahita sat breathing hard, relieved to share her secret with others. Her former self had been unrecognizable. Naya nodded with a smile, as did some of the others. Admiration filled the room. Beauty is very important to your mother, isn't it? Naya added. Anahita nodded. Some of us have had surgeries we are embarrassed to talk about. Morgan, a tall woman, put her hand up and had a mild look as she peered around, biting the side of her lip as if she was unsure she should say anything. I went to the Happy Vagina Cottage and got mine tightened after childbirth. Morgan confessed quickly and then took a drink of her lemonade. All the mothers smiled and there was slight laughter. This was getting better by the minute, although there was no lack of empathy toward one another. There was an unspoken rule of no judgment and extreme confidentiality. Okay, where's the before and after pictures? Araceli said in her frank New Yorker tone, leaving the R off of the word after, causing some comic relief as all the mothers reacted with laughter. Hey, I get it. We all need to have peace in our own skin, and that can mean different things to different people, Janelle added, reaching for a piece of bread from the basket. Shelby nodded and scratched the side of her head. In contrast to Araceli's accent, Shelby was from Louisiana and had a twang. Being comfortable in your own skin can be mental, psychological also. I mean, being from Louisiana and all, I joined my mamma and papa's vaudeville show, and I never thought we were very funny. I sang, danced, played my ukulele, whatever would help. Then when I was Araceli's age, I had a chance to go on a live talent show, you know, live TV. I wasn't scared at all. I thought, this is my big chance. Well, Shelby began looking through her digital camera, which caused more smiles from the long table as
all the mothers had growing curiosity. She then produced the episode showing her singing dressed like a puppet and banging her elbow on a table to part of the song. The song was about wishing for a piece of chewing gum and how long she would chew it and what flavor it would be. It was awkward. The judges on the show pulled a bright orange lever, causing her to fall below the stage, and the audience booed her. Shelby sat bravely with her head partially down, unafraid, as she made a confession of being a fool. Slowly, there was laughter around the table.
"We are here to live, so being embarrassed or embarrassing reminds us that we are alive. Also, that was years ago, so good safe laugh and you're cured, maybe," said Naya.
At that moment, young Araceli put her arms up and screamed at the top of her lungs in an uneven voice, "I'm alive!" She crescendoed so long that some of the toddlers came to see. It was awkward, cool, ironic, and confident at the same time. Nothing else could have helped put the situation into perspective. Everyone clapped for a second. Shelby felt like the star of the show, and she was the star of the show, even though Araceli helped it along. Shelby then began laughing and shaking and laughing more. The empathy the other mother showed her felt like the love she needed when this happened, and she now saw the humor in it. Through her broken voice, in the midst of the laughter, she attempted to say, "It was a stupid act. What was I thinking? I went on TV with that." The other ladies said things about her costume and how much her act would have been perfect for a kid's birthday party or for a children's stage in Tennessee. They remarked about how during her live performance, she tapped the table with her elbow to emphasize wanting a piece of chewing gum, and she showed her teeth each time. Now the humor in the situation was highly evident. The laughter wore the mothers out, and everyone refilled their glasses of lemonade and ginger ale. "I robbed a bank when I was 16. Everyone turned around and looked at Janelle. "Okay, y'all, no one-uppers, come on," Shelby laughed. "No, I'm 100% serious." Everyone looked shocked and amused. The room started to look darker as the clouds moved across, blocking the sun and causing the dining room to appear dim. This and all the moments were there for a reason. Like the Canterbury Tales of old, everyone told their tale, and everyone's tale mattered. It was a journey many hundreds of years after, but here they were. So we had a slumber party when I was turning 16, and we played Truth or Dare, and my friend's 22-year-old brother, who had a truck, was there. He said, since he was a bank teller, it would be really easy. Just ask for the money and signal with your eyes that you have something in your pocket. To help me win the bet, he was going to help us out. He told us when he would be working. We went in and stared hard at him and signaled to our pockets. He gave us an extra $20 bill. We left thinking we had won the bet. We were actually cheering as we ran out of the bank toward the car. But when we got out to the car, all these police cars came around and parked close to our car before we could even leave the parking lot. The 22-year-old brother, a bank teller guy, was seen being taken out in handcuffs. It was all over the local news, and they used his name and picture. But since we were 16, they couldn't use ours. All I could think was, wow, all this for an extra $20 and to say I won a bet. I associate turning 16 with mayhem. So we were sent to a home version of juvenile hall and had to see a psychologist. We were not allowed to associate with each other thereafter. I lost all my friends. Even when I went to apply for colleges, there was this gap of cryptic time that I couldn't explain. No extracurricular activities to put on an application. When I did get to college, I was terrified that someone would know it was me who robbed a bank for a bet and a lousy $20 bill. I overcompensated by being too nice. I volunteered for everything. I was always helping everyone, hoping they would like me. Janelle spoke as if she had given up. When she talked about volunteering, she had put one hand up as if the volunteering were some kind of crucifix that could protect her from humiliation or loss of what she valued. Everyone smiled at her in admiration. "Hey, here you are now," Naya said. Araceli raised her glass. "So shit, we have a bank robber, a coke addict, a porn lover, a former live TV performer, a patron of the Vag Clinic,
This is my kind of mommy group. So what's Saturday for the purse party?
Everyone agreed on a Saturday to meet at Mike and Araceli's house for a purse party, gathered their toddlers for nap time, and headed home. The mommy group had been cathartic, as usual. Each mother left a little bit lighter than she came in and more empathetic. Some felt as though they wanted to take care of someone even beyond caring for a toddler. The day of the purse party, Araceli welcomed them. They could see that her home looked identical to all the others. It was the usual 5,000-square-foot luxury floor plan with the large foyer. The difference was that some areas of the home were decorated while others remained empty. The decorations were in some cases overly opulent furniture and some cheap pieces she found at places that sell furniture for college students. She had put out spinach dip and other appetizers. Janelle felt compelled to bring extra appetizers. Araceli and the others smiled at her and shook their heads no to remind her that we don't see her as the 16-year-old bank robber. Mike brought out the purses, bags, and luggage that they produced in Tijuana. They had all the expensive brands, but everyone knew they were knockoffs. Then Mike smiled and said, "If anyone needs anything else special, we can talk." Araceli looked at him cautiously. "Okay, I have a few surprises at this purse party." She pronounced purse almost as poise. She then put out a sex toy catalog. The mothers clapped and laughed. "There's more than apple juice at this play date," Araceli said, even though it was adults only. She then put out bottles of hard liquor, beer, and wine. "Has anyone seen Shelby?" Joni asked. "Oh, she'll be here." After the ladies got comfortable, Shelby debuted in a costume dressed as a puppet. She began singing her vaudeville song. To everyone's surprise, it was not at all awkward in the living room. She sang with her Louisiana twang and banged her elbow on the coffee table each time she sang the part about wishing for a stick of chewing gum. The ladies looked impressed. Maybe not for live TV, but in the living room it was a treat. Naya smiled the widest, knowing this would heal Shelby from hating her former self for being humiliated on live TV. Her mothers were here, and no matter what, she could count on a bank robber, a coke addict, a rejuvenated vagina, a thoughtful physician, a young New Yorker who might have mafia connections, and one who endured 4 nose jobs in the quest to marry well. Araceli did bring out the cocaine, but while Joni waved it off, Anna joked that she could afford it now. In the end, no one took her up on it. Soon it would be Halloween, and the mothers would take their toddlers trick-or-treating and would all dress in a way that spoke silently to each other. A giant nose, a bank robber, a puppet, a doctor, a couch potato with a TV in front, watching porn, a woman wearing a cottage to look as though she's peering out, happy vagina cottage, a talkative and smart MTV model who clearly snorted too much cocaine. The 2-year-old boys would get bigger, the mothers would have more babies, and some families would move. Something had grown inside each boy mom that wasn't there before and would now forever dwell. The true tales they told in those homes on those days would live forever in the walls of the million-dollar homes that sit and await any new family where the mother believes she has married well.